Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Trotten's been raining off my cup. Pink via deck, my boost is the kleine Fahrdame to up. Gate mir kings a flint.
Hey everyone, this is Judy Gold, and you're listening to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm the host, and it's 2022. Happy New Year. Looking like it's going to be a great year again. Anyway, I hope you enjoy our guest this week, Corey Forrester, who is my soulmate I never knew I had. Also, if you live in Indianapolis, please, on January 15th, I will be in Carmel, Indiana, at Feinstein's. It's at a hotel, and I'll have more info at the end of the show. But enjoy. I love this guy. And Happy New Year.
Welcome to Kill Me Now. I am so excited. You know, here's the deal about our guest. We could not have had more opposite upbringings. And yet, more than most people I know, we are a kindred spirit. I fucking love this guy. I love this guy. I'm like madly in love. I often say it on the internet. He's straight. He's from the South. I mean, he's a wrestler. I fucking love him. I love him on so many levels. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure and honor, and I am so excited that Corey Ryan Forrester is our guest today.
Goodness, thank you so much, Judy. And if I may say, as someone who I'm one of those rare broken people who knew that I wanted to go into comedy when I was 5 years old. And because of that, I've been watching comedy my entire life. And you've just been there in my life, literally my whole life. Like, watching Comedy Central, my buddy Rob, when I told him that I was doing your podcast today, he literally lost his shit because like you and there's this core group of comedian that when I was, you know, in high school watching the premium blends and then all the roasts, right. y'all were just always there. And so I'm a little starstruck right now. I'm so excited.
Oh my God, Corey.
Thank you.
It's funny because when Comedy Central came out, I was one of those, you know, it was me and Colin and,
yeah,
you know, Patrice and Greg, Geraldo. I mean, there were a bunch of
Jim
us.
Norton, all those. Norton, yeah, everybody, yeah. Like everybody in that guys. Tough crowd circuit was just my idols.
And yet I'm too old for Comedy Central now. So I've been told. And
I think
yet,
I am too, for the record.
Oh, please. Any woman who's gotten her period is too old for Comedy Central. Corey, you have such an interesting life, and I try to really do a lot of research on people. You're not easy, but whatever.
Oh, I wish there was more out there.
But I did find some really interesting stuff. Your father is Dale.
Yep.
Your mother's Laura.
That's true.
Your sister's Kirby.
Nailing it.
And she's married to Lloyd.
Holy God, it's all out there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Like, okay, before we start, I just want to say, I find your parents really interesting because I found this article. Wait, let me just open it.
Oh, this is great. I love what you're doing right now.
The oldest house in Chickamauga. Is that how you say it?
Chickamauga, yeah. It's the oldest residential house in Chickamauga, yeah.
So you're from Chickamauga,
mm-hmm.
Which is in Georgia, northern Georgia. You're right by Alabama and Tennessee.
Yep, I can be in Tennessee in 12 minutes and Alabama in 30 minutes.
So it depends on, I think you have a joke about that, don't you? Depends on who you hate more.
Maybe. Sometimes people always are like, oh, I love that joke that you did about what? And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? And it'll just be one of those things that I just said and don't remember saying. So very possible.
Yeah, I have still people coming up to me on the street going, it's Judy's show! So you're born in this small town, which, by the way, had the deadliest battle in the Civil War. Is that correct? Or
second,
one of them?
Second deadliest battle. Yeah, the Battle of Chickamauga. Yep, that is correct.
And they lost like, what is it? 5,000 people almost?
Yeah, it's up there. As often as I say to people, where I'm from was the second deadliest battle in the entire Civil War. I actually don't have the number off the top of my head, which sucks because I had like a 12-minute bit about the whole thing at one point. But, you know, facts. Don't let those get in the way.
Yeah,
it
was like 18,000 on one side and 16,000 plus on another side. But you guys won. I mean, you know, your people.
Yeah.
So your parents bought this fucking house. God damn with the fucking house. And they were on Home and Gardens If Walls Could Talk.
That is true. And I have a pretty funny story about that.
Oh, good.
So I was 15 or 16 years old at that time. Yeah, they were on an episode of Walls Could Talk. I had just started doing stand-up because I had wanted to do some form of comedy since I was 5 years old. Now, at five, I didn't know what the word stand-up comedian meant. I just knew comedy. Like, to me, Chris Farley and Jerry Seinfeld were the same thing. Like, I didn't know the differences.
Right, you didn't know there was.
Yeah.
And you used to, with your father, watch Leno, well, first Carson and Leno, and just,
And I just knew whatever all these dudes that make my dad laugh, whatever it is they do, that's what I want to do. So I'd like my whole life, that's all I wanted to do. And then I'm 16, I start doing stand up. And then all of a sudden, HGTV is coming to our house to film. And in my little brain, I'm just like, there's cameras here. I'm going to shine, you know? Well, they do this whole thing on my mom and dad. They end up doing this whole thing on my sister. And at one point, they had me crawl under the cellar. And they did this like, you're not going to believe this, but reality TV is bullshit.
Bullshit! And so
they had me crawl under the house to like recreate us finding this coffee can full of money that they claimed in the show, like help the Forsters pay for some of the work on their house. It was like $100. And so they filmed me going in there and recreating, and I'm in there and I'm like army crawling. I'm like, this is going to be so fucking cool. I'm going to look awesome. I'm going to be on TV. All my friends are going to see me on TV. They showed the back of my head. I was the only one in the family that didn't make it on the episode.
And
I'm sitting there like, I'm the one that wants to be on TV. And they cut me the fuck out. Like, it was so, it was my first experience of getting bumped in show business.
That is fucking hilarious. Well, but the house is full of history, right?
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah. It's called the Tom Lee House, and Tom Lee was Gordon Lee's brother, and Gordon Lee founded the school that I went to high school as. It was also a little more background. It was when my mom was a kid, she grew up in like just tremendous poverty. Like they didn't have shit. They had nothing. And when they would drive, or sometimes their big like vacation was literally just driving around. They would just look at things, you know? God. And so she'd always seen that house and was like, one day, you know? And and my dad, all not a completely similar background to my mom, but he grew up, you know, that his dad was in construction and they had food on the table and everything was good.
Right.
And then he, but my dad's a very, very smart as a whip feller, writer, advertiser, yada, yada. Yeah. And once he kind of got it together and realized, oh my God, I'm doing really well. I think I can get her that, that house.
Oh, he and bought it for her.
And he bought it for us. So, yeah, that was like his first, that was his only really big thing he's ever done. Cause like, that was pretty much it. Like, I remember I was born in a duplex and my mom was supporting my dad because he had wanted, he went out on his own and started his own business, was making no money. My mom was a nurse and she was like, I don't care, baby. I'll take care of you. I believe in you. And he finally got his shit together and he's like, by God, I'm buying her, her house. So he spent it all on the house.
That is like true love.
Yeah. He's a G.
They sound like they are so in love. Are they still in love?
I mean, no, but yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, but they're still married, which is something.
Right. It's work. It's fucking work.
It's work. They're a great partnership.
So your father is a storyteller and writer.
He's in advertising. He has his own advertising agency. He has, you know, at this point he's kind of semi-retired. He only has a couple accounts and they're basically all his buddies who have businesses that he, you know, just takes care of their advertising.
What stuff. Kind of advertising? What did he do before? Like, did he have like
He handled the Hardee's in like the Southeast.
Wow.
Like not like all of, like not nationwide Hardee's.
Right,
but, you know,
a
large portion of them in the Southeast. And then we live close to Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is not a big city, but it is our big city.
Right.
And he did advertising for a couple businesses there. The Barn Nursery, that's his big, like people still, people around here don't know that they know my dad's work because I hear people say his jingles all the time.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. The Barn Nursery is, we've got, it's like, it's springtime. Go play in the yard. We've got ferns coming in, trailer load after trailer load after trailer load, and people use that as a joke all the time and stuff, and they have no idea that like my dad
that's
made
that so
up
great
shit. yeah that's pretty cool.
And your mom was a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And is your sister's older than you?
Sister's 2 years younger than me.
I couldn't figure it out.
She seems older than me,
right? 34. You're a baby. You're a fucking baby.
I know.
So when you were in second grade, now, first of all, can you explain to my listeners what it's like, first of all, as a Jew who grew up in the tri-state area? Oh, sorry. That's the Jew bell. As a Jew who grew up in the tri-state area.
That's what
area.
We do down here when we see one.
You do? Oh, that's great. Okay. It's probably rusty. All right. So... the German accent gives me the creeps.
Yeah.
And the Southern accent scared me a little. And still
it
does.
I get it.
So what was it like? First of all, I'm assuming there were no Jews around you.
I mean, not that I know of, you know.
Right. Well, you would have known, Corey.
Well, I don't know because it's so funny. The last time I was when we wrote our first book, I did The View, and The View puts you up at the La Parca Meridian in New York. And so our publishers, Simon & Schuster, who I'm out of contract with now, so I can say this, they were like, they put us up at the La Parca Meridian and they were just like, whatever you guys want, it's on the house. Like, you don't even have to pay for incidentals. You guys just drink up at the hotel, do whatever. So what did we do? We called every New York comic that we were buddies with who were open micers and we're like, hey, y'all can come drink on our tab at the La Parca Meridian.
No way.
So we get everybody there. And of course, it's my collective of New York comic friends. So there's some Jewish people, there's some Italian people, yada, yada, yada. And my mom and my Aunt Beth, I had flown them out to be there to meet, you know, Whoopi and everything. It was a fun time. And this is one of those situations of the Southern accent sounding bad, but the thing the person was saying she didn't intend on it being bad.
Right.
She just said a thing, but because of her accent, it seems weird.
Right.
Well, we're sitting there and my Aunt Beth, as loud as she could over when I introduced her to one of my friends, she's had a little couple drinks and she goes, oh my God, do y'all remember when we saw that Jew at the Pizza Hut in Alabama? And what she meant by that was,
oh my God.
She didn't mean and it was horrible. It's right. just that that's how few there were that it's right. it's a flashbulb memory in her mind of like one time I saw a Jewish person at a right. Pizza Hut in Alabama, because like I said, no, that not a very dense population. And it was just, again, one of those things where I'm looking around going like, gosh, she literally just means she saw one. And that's just how she sounds. I promise everything's OK.
That's so funny it. Because a Jew eating a Pizza Hut, when there's so much better pizza.
You know, there wasn't at this part of Alabama, yeah. though, I'll tell you that much.
So did everyone freak out, or were you like,
no, well, I mean, it was a group of comics. So they laughed their ass off. You right. know what I mean? Like, it was just really, really, really funny. Yeah.
So you grew up now. Did you have any black friends growing up?
They were my cousins. Yeah. Okay. All of my cousins that I know are black.
Who, what?
My, because let me explain it to you.
I love this.
All of my cousins are black because my aunt, this is me quoting people in my purview, not me. My cousins are black because my aunt made a mistake. You understand what I'm saying? You know what I mean?
She married a black guy?
Oh, well, didn't marry him, but like that, but she had kids by a black guy. And I remember when I was a kid, and by the way, this is not my parents saying this. My parents are awesome right. people. But right. I just remember hearing like, yeah, you know, Corey's aunt made a mistake. And it's like they, but so yeah, my cut, but like, I'm not certain, maybe to defend them a little bit, maybe they just meant out of wedlock because they were all very, very Christian. You know right. what I'm saying? But like, right. I don't think so. But yeah, my cousins were black. We only had one black girl that went to our school. Like, so there wasn't really an option. And like, they don't live, like there wasn't a lot of black people in my city. Now, like in right. the surrounding area, there were, but Chickamauga itself, very, very, very white, you know, so no, not like I said, that my cousins who I saw at all holidays and things, but not, no.
But no one, when you were growing up, no one said, you know, racist shit or?
It's one of those things where like, you know how
in
you can.
In your immediate family, like were they?
Not my immediate family, no. Yeah. My parents, like, even though they are conservative people now, I know that like my dad to me has always been the reason that I grew up to be like more of a left-leaning person because of just how and it stuck out. Like when you live in the South, you know, like dad's always the dude who was like giving, you know, a $50 bill to a homeless guy just because he's like, son, you don't know, he might need it more than I do. And blah, blah. Right, whereas right. like a lot of people around here, are like, dude, that's just so they get your $50. Now they won't have to work. Blah, 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 blah. And like
oh, my dad, fuck up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And my dad was like, you know, we did have black kids. When I say I didn't have any black friends, I didn't at school, but like on my ball teams, because of the surrounding area, black kids would be in our rec league. So I did have right. like kids that I played ball with and like, you know, sometimes they come from underprivileged families and my dad was always going to pick them up. Like dad just picked everybody up. He paid for everybody's uniforms. He didn't make the kids like no right. kids had to like pay. And now granted, it was my dad was doing really well, but like he was just
doesn't
such
matter.
A,
but there's plenty of people who do well who don't
for,
do that.
For sure. That's know? That's true. But like dad was always such an inspiration. Like he was just like, you know, these kids, they don't have it like we do. And I'm not making them pay for their uniform if they want to play ball. And if their parents can't get them here, I'm taking them and blah, blah, blah. So like and about the whole racist thing when I was a kid, it's to me, did I hear racist things when I was a kid growing up in the South? It's kind of like how, you know, how technically you can always see your nose. But since you can always see it, your brain tunes it out.
Right.
I don't remember anything because that, you know, I don't remember anything specifically. I do, though. I have a couple examples of like when it.
OK,
when
I need to interject. You please. Did mention a nose. OK, go ahead. All right. Go ahead.
So like when I got older and I started becoming more aware, like when I was a kid, obviously, I don't know what racist things are to say. I was just trying to play Power Rangers and watch sports. You know, I didn't know anything. The reason that we ended up leaving the church that we were at right after 9/11 happened. So I'm in eighth grade. All right. I'm in eighth grade. 9/11 happens and we're at church and my cousins are with me, with my whole family. And the pastor was up and he had some sort of PowerPoint that he was showing. And it was about 9/11 and how it was affected. The after effects were affecting everybody, including children. And there was this woman that was up and she was speaking. And I don't remember what her name was. I do remember that she was a professor. It was a black lady who was a professor. That just, I remember that part of it. She says something, yada, yada, yada. And the preacher turns the screen off and he looks at the congregation and he goes, now that woman, even though she was black, I agree with everything she says. He said that, like, and that's like the first time it, like, I heard, like, oh. I was, and my mom and dad turned, looked at us. My cousins weren't paying attention. They're a little bit younger than me. Thank God, you know.
Yeah.
And they looked at us and they go, "Get your stuff. We're out of here. We're leaving." And so then I kind of did start noticing.
And you all walked
things.
Out?
Yeah. And we never went there again. And that was my childhood church, you know. And I started noticing things like that a little bit more as I got older, but like most stuff was sincerely just, yeah, there was probably jokes and some ignorance, but I don't remember anybody saying anything hateful. And that's probably because nobody had ever actually really been around Black kids except for like playing sports and stuff. You know what
right.
I mean?
You learn that shit in your house.
You
like,
do.
You know, you watching TV or like, you know, hearing, you know, news stories and hearing your parents' response to those things, you know?
For sure. And I mean this when I say it, because people always ask me about, you know, like, oh, you know, this, oh, the Trump thing that, how, you know, how did you not see it coming? I was like, well, I did. Like when I called that shit. But when I was a kid, it was my place where I live was so apolitical. No, nobody ever talked about who they were voting for. Nobody.
Right. Same.
Like nobody at all. You know?
Right. But nobody gave it. Yeah. No one knew. If you were a Republican or a Democrat,
no idea.
No one put signs on their fucking lawns.
Hell no.
You know?
Matter of fact, where I'm from in the South, like you're coming from areas where like NAFTA had, you know, taken some factories away. Everybody around here had a pretty much fuck them all kind of idea. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, but it wasn't until Obama ran against McCain that all of a sudden everybody starts being real political and golly, what could that be about? You know what I mean? But I'm serious. I was like, I'm not lying. When I was a kid, like I remember the Bob Dole, rest in peace, at Bill Clinton debates, and I remember my dad being like, I could see that. And that, you know what I mean? Like,
everybody
was like that.
And respectful of one another.
Yeah,
and they
for
didn't
sure.
interrupt each other and they followed the fucking rules.
Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lova, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
When you went to school, were you, first of all, was it a tiny little school?
Yeah. I graduated with like 82 people or something.
Wow. So everyone knew each other.
It's
small Southern, like fairy tale sort of.
Yeah, pretty much.
Was there any crime in your town?
I mean, like there, yes, but not violent crime. I mean, we were all on pills, you know, like all of us, like, because that was, you know, the Purdue Pharmaceuticals and OxyContin, they had just kind of started in the 90s. And so by the time I got in high school, it had really spread everywhere. And it was also in that little, I say sweet spot, very ironically, that sweet spot of they were all readily available, but there wasn't a lot of bad information out yet about them. Like at this point, everyone still thought that, oh, these are just miracle drugs that help you. I'm doing a bit right now, and it's like our mamas did not know that OxyContin could kill you. They'd just be like, "Well, honey, this is just a Tylenol that goes hard." That's how everyone felt. Like it was just, oh, look, and like everyone's uncle took it because his back was hurting, and that's the only way that he could go to work. And so we were all as kids able to get a hold of them through the medicine cabinets and shit, and we all got on them, and we were all just having a great time. And the narrative I remember from older people was like, "Yeah, you can get fucked up and not be hung over, and then OD, 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 car wreck, OD."
No
OD.
Way!
Oh fuck yeah! I buried three friends within like 2 months.
How old were you?
When that happened, I was 18, I think. And I had kind of already given up on them because I kind of just saw what they were doing to people when I was in high school. Like I got in trouble when I was 15, I got kicked off the football team and suspended and everything for doing pills. And then I would just occasionally do them because, you know how it goes. You got a buddy, he robs pharmacies. So you've always got pills. You know how that goes.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, we've all been there. And so, yeah, I would experiment around.
No, actually, as a Jew, we have a buddy who's the pharmacist.
Ding,
and
ding,
owns
ding.
The pharmacy.
Right.
And makes the pills and writes the prescriptions. Okay. The doctor. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I had started, I never had like, I'm like a very, what's the word? I don't have an addictive personality, but I have I'm a bingey type dude.
Yeah. Nothing in moderation. If nothing, you like something. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not a guy who like, I haven't had a drink in, I've been sober for the past 5 months, and that's so easy for me to do.
Right.
But like, yeah, I know that that night when I finally allow myself to celebrate, I'm not having three beers. I'm having 20. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like I know.
Yes. I don't do anything like 40 to 60%.
Exactly.
Everything 5,000%,
But I am a person that's able to recognize, hey, whoa, this ain't a good thing. Don't do it. So like I stopped doing pills, and unfortunately I've got buddies who do suffer and have that disease and have not, it's been rough. I don't know why I even got into that.
No, but it's interesting because, you know, for me it was pot, but you know, everyone smoked pot and drank, and I hated drinking.
Yeah.
That's changed.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
You know, the pot that I was smoking in high school is shit. It's
garbage.
Not even like one hit of this other pot. It, uh-huh. It's like four joints of, you know, or nickel bag, as we used to call it. But do you think the prevalence of pills is more, or that, you know, because we all hear about it. Most kids up here, if they're going to OD, it's on coke, laced with fentanyl or heroin. You know, it's the fentanyl thing. Do you think that the pill, and I haven't watched the Sackler documentary yet, but
I know I haven't either because I just know how mad it's going to make me.
Right.
You know,
but do you think that that's more prevalent down there, down in the
South,
or more poor communities? Or
I don't know how it is now, but I do know that, like, you know, it's not like this is my opinion. Like it did start, like they started their trials in Kentucky in the coal mines. And if you look and you chart it and you look at like the first cases of OD and everything, like it absolutely spread like a virus from that center point in Kentucky outward. And so like, yeah, now it is widespread, but just like anything, I'd say that the thing where a thing started is it still has to be more prevalent. And like, yeah, of course, poor communities, just because like the way that these pills were set up was basically like, hey guys, your back hurts and you can't work. Well, since we don't live in a socialist country that's just going to help you out, what we're going to do instead is give you a magical pill that will help you continue to work. Well, like that's a very, that's a poor, exclusive, like, look, like they, or like that appeals to them big time. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, yes, yeah. I have to work or my family. So if I have to take this, that's whatever. Right, I'm not convinced.
If this is going to help me keep my job, yeah, make more money, feed my family.
Yeah. Right. And so, and it's predatory and like, it's horrible. And like, that's why, like, I just have a huge, like, don't get me wrong. There's some people, it is possible to be a drug addict and also a bag of shit. You can be that. But like, right. I've always, like, when I hear certain people, they're like, oh yeah, he's a scumbag junkie. I've always been like, man, you don't know that guy. Like,
right.
Like he may be a junkie, but he might not be a scumbag. And like, you don't know how he got there. And like, it's also very possible.
Why he got there.
Like,
there.
There's a lot of people right now who look like scumbag junkie heroin addicts where I'm from. But the reality is that they started out by taking a pill that was given to them by a doctor.
Right.
And they got addicted to it. And then they couldn't get that anymore. And then they started on heroin. Like, that's a reality.
Right.
So I can't just look at everybody like that. And again, my dad always taught me to give money to homeless people when I seen them, just because like they might not be having to. So I can't do that. But like, yeah, I think that like all of that stuff, like, you know, no matter, poor people get the fucking shit end of that shit. You know,
they're like,
oh, we're not allowed to try things out on humans. They don't consider poor people humans. So they're trials.
Right. So
sorry for getting up on that soapbox.
No, I love it. It's fascinating to me. So you're in second grade and you tell your teacher, I'm going to be a comedian.
Yeah, Miss Staub. And one of the greatest days of my life was I actually dedicated the first book I wrote to Miss Staub, and I was able to like go to her house and give it to her and sign it. And like, we had a really good cry.
Did she love it?
Oh my God, she loved it. Cause she signed my second grade yearbook, you know, Corey, can't wait to see you on Saturday Night Live one day. So, I mean, you know, that year she encouraged me to enter the Young Authors Contest in Walker County, which, by the way, largest county in the state of Georgia. And I won.
Yeah, baby.
So she was one of those like,
wait, I need to know, what was your story about?
You know, I don't remember all of it.
Oh my God.
It was sci-fi. And unfortunately my mom, and we've talked about this so much, like she sometimes randomly will have a couple drinks and apologize again for this. Like she'll just have a couple martinis and go, I'm so sorry. I threw your story away. I didn't mean it.
There's gotta be somewhere. No,
no. I mean, this is long before the internet and I illustrated it too.
Shit. I'm going to kill her.
I illustrated it too, and I was not a good artist, but like I know that it was about aliens and such. I was a big Star Wars kid, and it was sci-fi. Right. And honestly, it probably wasn't even a little bit good. I was just like one of the only kids in Walker County who tried, and therefore I won. But who cares?
Right.
You know what I mean?
So you go through, you know, grade school, everything's normal, and then you decide at 16,
mm-hmm.
that you're just going to go to an open mic night. Like, how did that happen?
Well, it's been a thing that I'd wanted to do forever, and I didn't really know the machinations or how to get into it at all. Like, no clue. And then I was 15 years old. Me and my buddy snuck into the Comedy Catch in Chattanooga and saw my childhood hero, who was Tim Wilson, rest in peace, one of the best comedians of all time. And I'd only ever heard him on CDs and watched him make my dad laugh. And we snuck into the club, and it's the first time I ever saw live comedy. And it was like the first time I was ever like, oh shit. Like, I ain't that good. Like, cause you know, when you're young, you're like, in my mind, I was like, I'm gonna start doing this. And then I'm going to be like Adam Sandler on Saturday Night Live.
Yes,
18.
Yes, yes.
I didn't go to college. Cause I was like, why would I need to do that?
Yeah.
I'm about to be famous. But then I see Tim sort of get humbled by watching that. And I'm like, but I got to do this. I got to get on stage somehow. And I didn't know what was going on. I was writing, this is about to be an old sentence. I was writing a blog on MySpace. And this guy had read some of my blogs and he messaged me and he was like, hey man, I run a comedy show at the Amigos Mexican Restaurant on Hicks and Pike. Would you like to come do like host our comedy night? I've never done stand up in my life. And I was like, oh, I mean, dude, I really want to get into that. But like, I don't know. I don't have any jokes. Like, I haven't written anything yet.
I didn't know
that, like, you have to just start doing it. And he goes, well, dude, your blog is super funny. Just take some of this stuff and, like, just say it out loud. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I was super nervous. And he goes, I'll give you $100. I was like, I'm fine.
Okay.
Percocets are only three, so I'm in. And, you know, and so.
How old were you?
I was 16. So like, This is the first one. Yeah. And it took me like 7 years to get paid again, for the record. I was like, yeah, $100. And at that time too, like gas was 80 cents. So that's how much $100 was, you know?
Right.
I, yeah. Like, And not that $100 isn't a lot of money now, but you get what I'm saying. So I went and I did it. And then while there, the guy that was headlining was this dude who ran the open mics at the local comedy club. And I, and it just like the first type of networking, I meet him and I go. And then I was just one of those cats who, and this is like, you know, this is the Bush administration. I was one of them cats that like, I was clawing at the comedy club door every single day that it was open. I was there then, you know, after going to all the open mics, finally they let me do guest spots. And then I became the house MC and I was doing, you know, every show. I was doing the 7 shows in the main room, the 2 open mics, running my own show out there. I'm doing like 10 shows a week in one room and nobody, and I didn't realize like, oh, you're the only one do it. Now I look back, I'm right. Like, shit, you were the only one doing that. But like, I just had, like, I was such and always have been like such a singular focused dude. Like it's, With that, you know, so yeah, that once I saw that at 16, I'm like, fucking, you know, this is it. Now, 18, 17 years later, I'm just like, God damn, you should have went to college, boy. But, you know, whatever.
So you're 16 and like, what the fuck are you talking about?
At my dick.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was about it. Like my dick. And like, I really wish I could have remembered. I have the set. That is, it wasn't my first time ever doing stand-up, but it was my first time ever at that room that I'm just talking about. So it would have been like maybe 8 months later. And I've got that tape. And every now and then I think, I'm going to watch it just to see. And right. I can't
do it either.
I can't bring myself. And I, every now and then I just look at the thumbnail of it because I had long hair. I was tan. I had pretty straight teeth. And I was gorgeous. I was 6. I look at that and I just start feeling bad for a second, but I can't bring myself to watch it.
To listen.
I had one of my first jokes. I mean, I'm 16. One of my first jokes was about a fun size candy bar. And it was like that. Oh, you call that fun size? I wish my girlfriend thought that. Blah, blah. Just fucking stupid. Just 5 minutes of dick shit. Just such stupid shit. And that was what I kind of found out. Like, I really didn't start. I mean, by the time I was, I think 24, something clicked and I, all of a sudden I had something to talk about. And for the first eight years of my stand-up career, I had nothing to talk about, but I always look back on it and go, but you still got 8 years of stage time, which figured out what I wanted to say. My stage presence was amazing. Like when I was 21, it wasn't talking about anything, but God damn it, I looked like I knew what I was doing.
Right.
So by the time I had
you could
figured
be a politician.
Out, yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah. For sure. I definitely could. If I had no shame whatsoever, I could be a politician and a preacher and I'd own the whole town.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were lying about your age. Did your to get into the clubs, mm-hmm. did your family know you were doing this?
Yeah. They like, I don't know that they knew that I was like legit sneaking in, but like I had my grandmother would drive me. She was a degenerate. And so she would drive me and get drunk. And like, I didn't really ever have to lie. I just would walk in with her and they never questioned it because she was an older lady. And then I would just go in there and then because I was with her, I would, you know, drink and stuff because they would just bring her buckets and like they didn't question that I wasn't. It ended up getting kicked out one time and like banned from the comedy club because I wasn't aware that this is how stupid I was. I was on stage talking about how expensive the drinks were.
Oh, that's
at the club.
Smart. That's
yeah, no,
smart.
I know. What a fucking moron. So they kicked me out, tell me I can't do stand up there anymore. And I've cried, you know, I didn't know what to do. It's like, well, my career's over. What a stupid thing to think. But the dude who was running that open mic, he didn't own the club. He just ran that room. And he's like, hey man, look, here's what you do. Did you ever watch The Gong Show? And I was like,
oh, God.
I was like, yeah, when I was a kid with my granny. And he goes, look, You're not allowed to be back here, but the unknown comic can be here. They won't know. Just put a bag over your head.
Oh, my God.
I'm desperate enough to be like, this is what I have to do.
So
I go to the club one night. I've got a bag over my head, holes in it. Nobody's questioning it. This is, by the way, when you can still smoke indoors.
Right.
I get super, super drunk because I'm so nervous. I go on stage. I'm so drunk. I have to sit down and I'm trying to light a cigarette through the bag. And I caught the bag on fire.
No way.
And as I'm running out, trying to like pat it out, I run off stage. The bartender, which was the owner's mom, recognizes me. Comes, grabs me in the bathroom, grabs me by the ear, pulls me to the owner, has told him this is that son of a bitch I said could never come back here again. She explains the whole situation. The owner just starts dying laughing. He's like, if you want to do stand up so bad that you went through all that, you're forgiven. You're fine. And me and him have had a father son relationship ever since.
Oh my God. That's fucking great.
Yeah.
She didn't pour water in your face. What the fuck?
No, she was more of a stab you and throw you in a hole type gal.
She's a fucking cunt.
I wouldn't say that to her, but I'll let you.
Hey everyone, I have a new sponsor and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co, and it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
You graduate high school.
By the hair of my chinny chin chin.
But yet you're brilliant, which is Yes, we comics are smart. And yet, I mean, I have terrible ADD, but we don't learn. A lot of times we don't learn the same way other people learn. We don't think the way other people think. We think and joke. And I mean, it's, you know, people don't seem to understand, like, when something happens, like even a huge tragedy, we can acknowledge the horror, but we also think, where's the fucking joke? That's all we ever fucking think.
It's probably my knee jerk. It's the knee jerk reaction. I'm actually trying to work on that now, which goes against everything that I believe.
No,
in a stand-up
you can't.
Comedian.
No, I barely
like my uncle, for instance, the first joke I wrote for, you know, when the pandemic happened, we were doing Zoom shows. We had to. And the first joke I wrote for it, my uncle had just killed himself. And my literal first thought was, well, at least he died doing what he loved, sitting in his chair, holding a gun. And I did that joke. And like, of course, my comedian friends thought it was great. And like, but the audience was like, Jesus Christ, man.
It's all about them.
They were just like, I can't believe you. That's a little rough making a suicide. I was like, well, it's about my uncle, for God's sake.
Yeah, I own it, bitch.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. That's why, you know, even like you're going to get into this with Amber, your wife, like shit you. That you can't say to her.
Yeah.
That you have to say to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like young people who are the really the ones who are going to comedy clubs now because.
Not in my shows, but that's awesome.
Oh, that's good. I like the older audience because they're fucking smart. But the young people are so literal. Everything you say, it's like, no, it's called nuance, you fucking asshole.
Right, right. Like I have to go out of my way sometimes. Like it's getting worse. I feel like I have to go out of my way sometimes to when I'm setting up a bit to go, now, please, I need everyone to understand that the next thing that is about to come out of my mouth is me quoting the person that I was having a conversation with. Right. These are not my thoughts.
Right. You know, because this is a verbatim. Yeah.
People will like, you know, come in and out of like drunken consciousness or they weren't paying attention. They'll just hear me say a thing. And then after the show, they'll be like, I can't believe that you believe this. And I'm like, what do you mean? They go, well, you said that on stage. I go, no, I said my uncle said that. Like that, I didn't.
I fucking hate everyone. God You're damn. Making me hate everyone.
Yeah. For sure.
So while you were doing stand up, you had many odd jobs. I'm going to just name a few. House painter.
Mm-hmm.
You worked in retail. You sold motorcycles. You collected urine samples. Yeah. Is this true?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You delivered flowers. You were a fucking hotel maid.
Yeah, at Yellowstone National Park. In the Eisenhower Presidential room. That was my first room that I had to hit every day.
Wait. Cleaning the sheets. So wait. You would go in. Did you have a uniform?
We had polos and the kind of pair of khaki. It was red. Yeah, it was maroon, I'm pretty sure. And it was I ended up quitting that job. It was the first time that, because I don't do that. Like, that's not a thing that I was very much raised not to do that. Even then, it was like, even if your boss is an asshole, you don't quit, which now I do not subscribe to that. Fuck, right. If your boss is an asshole, fuck them, quit. But like, right. I was not a quitter, but I had a big argument with the person I was working with because it's the first time I found out that they don't always clean the quilt portion of the.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like I was in charge of like cleaning the beds and stuff. And so like I would take all that stuff to the laundry and they were just like, whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I was like, I'm taking the stuff off the bed and I'm cleaning it. They go, no, the top cover, you don't clean that. And I was like, why? They go, yeah, it takes too much time and blah, blah, blah. I go, no, you have to. And they go, that part's not really that dirty. And to which I said, I go, if you ever fucked at a hotel, because you don't get under the covers. You know what I mean? Like, you don't, no one tucks themselves in to get their dick
sucked. Oh my God. Like, can I tell you something? What, being on the road in like the 80s and 90s, like the first, when they had those stupid fucking quilts, the first thing I did when I got in the room was take that fucking thing off and throw it in the corner and never look at it again.
And I'm here to tell you that at least in my anecdotal experience, that is the solid move to do. And I got really mad that was the way they were doing things. And so I was not a hotel maid for a long time, but I was one enough long enough to have a good respect for them, you know.
Now, did people leave you tips? I always leave a tip for the hotel maid.
Yeah, I would. From time to time, every now and then, especially in the presidential suite itself. But again, I wasn't there long enough to have like a good straw polo.
Okay,
but every
what
now
do
and
you
then,
what do you get?
We were told not to take them though. By the way,
oh fuck them.
Yeah, because you know they went in and grabbed it.
Yeah. What do you leave for, per night for a hotel?
I mean, I'm usually only in there like one night, one city. I've left. You know, $10, I guess. I don't know. Is that bad?
No, I leave five a night. Is that
you
bad?
No, I don't think so. Cause I don't even know. Like I've always been like, am I supposed to do that? Cause I'm an over tipper in a lot of situations.
Yeah,
cause
same.
I get scared that I don't know. Like, I'm like, am I supposed to tip this? Am I supposed to, fuck you. Just take all my goddamn money. Right. But like now, you know, they're not even really coming in anymore. And often
that's right.
For the most part, I often clean my own room. I'm one of them. I clean my room every day, especially now they're not coming in, but like, it's like a very big do not disturb because I used to drink a lot. And so like, I didn't want them coming in. And then by the time I was waking up, they weren't going to come in and
right.
I would just
I know,
tidy
that
up myself.
Pisses me off. So like, comics who sleep late. And then by the time you get up after you do fucking radio and then you take a nap, then
usually it was just like, if the night before we had gotten really hammered and maybe recorded our podcast in there and I didn't have time to get it up, I would just throw some money down. But for the most part, it's like they weren't really coming in there anyways. But I've always been like, do you tip them still? Is that a thing? And is this guy? And I don't fucking know. So like, I try
to do it like every time I get it cleaned, I leave something because you don't know. Like if you leave it at the end of the week, like, you know, 30 who bucks knows or whatever. You don't know who the fuck gets it.
Oh, no. And that's why at comedy clubs, I'm really like, really like a stickler for like whoever our waitress in the green room is the first night. I'm like, what's your schedule? Are you going to be here tomorrow night?
I do that too.
Are you
going to
be here the whole weekend? Because I always tell them, I go, if you're going to be here this whole weekend, I'm just going to take care of you big time on Sunday. But if you're not, you just let me know. And then this is your, yours. And I'm a huge, because it's happened before where they weren't. And I will straight up, you know, put money in an envelope and give it to the owner and be like, you give this to Whitney and it fucking better go to Whitney because she was awesome. And I'm like, then I'm trying to find Whitney on Instagram and Facebook to make sure that she got it.
Yeah, I know.
Because the last thing I want is for anyone out there to be like, yeah, I mean, he was funny, but he didn't fucking tip me and he drank all goddamn weekend.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. You were a hay baler?
Yeah, well, that just sounds good about all of us were. Everyone in my hometown, all my buddies, where all the farms around here that did hay, every summer you spend so much time throwing hay bales into the back of tractors, absolutely for free for these dudes that have farms. And then afterwards, they would let you drink all the beer that you wanted from their cooler and they would buy you a barbecue sandwich. And it was the greatest deal in the world for us.
Oh, that's great.
We were just like, you know, kids. And I say kids, I mean, we're teenagers and right out of college. And like, it was great because we'd be like, oh yeah, you know, my brother-in-law Lloyd married my sister. His dad, you know, Mr. Askew, we'd go down there, we'd bale hay all day. We'd smoke a little weed, we'd have a good time. This is us boys. I'm not putting that on Mr. Askew. He wasn't there doing any bad things. And so we would do all that, and then fellowship, and then we get barbecue sandwich, and we get to get drunk. So it wasn't like I clocked in every day at Big Hay, you know. Right. But we did. That was a big part of our culture. Is like. I remember when I truly felt like I'd made it, it was that I didn't need to bale hay anymore for them. I was like, yeah, I can afford my own beer and barbecue sandwich. Right.
I don't need you. What about your family's bakery?
That was a pipe dream kind of my mom's, a thing that she thought about when she was a kid, like, oh, maybe I'd want to do this, you know? And then my dad was doing so well that she decided I told you my mom was a nurse. My mom had me and she was a nurse for her pregnancy with me. And then when I was two, and then when she had my sister Kirby, my dad was like, he had really good clients and he was doing well. And he told her, he said, listen, I'm not telling you what to do with your life, but if you don't want to work, you do not have to. And I would love it if you would just stay home and take care of the kids. And my mom was like, that'd be awesome. I'd love to do that shit.
Right.
So, and you know, cause kudos to her, like she's the reason that dad was even there in the beginning. Like she was like, I don't care that you're not making any money. I'll support us on my nursing salary. It's like, she deserved it.
Right.
Good for her, you know? And so she hadn't worked really my whole life. You know, she was, when I say she didn't work, I mean, she didn't have a job. I mean, the woman was
an employee. Being a mother is so fucking hard.
And it's not even just that too, but like, you know, she kept the house up. She was constantly doing this, that, and the woman was in the yard every day. And I know that that's just hobby stuff, but the woman wasn't sitting on her couch drinking a martini.
Right.
And then we would get a little older and she's like, maybe I'd like to do this. And like, comedy wasn't necessarily going great for me at this point. I was like,
how old are you?
I think I'm 26 at this point. And I really thought by then, I was going to be in movies.
Like, can I tell you something? Add a decade every time you think.
I know. I think the same shit now that I thought at 26.
I know. It never stops. It never ends.
And so she kind of pitched this thing about and my sister had recently started just as a hobby making cupcakes and cakes. And I got to tell you, like, everyone, she's the best. It's unbelievable. Like, there's things that I don't even like that she makes. And it's, what are you doing here? So they were like, my mom was like, I would like to do this. And Kirby was like, I'd like to do this. Or we can't do it without you. And in my brain, I'm like, maybe this is an out. Maybe I'd be happier working with my family and I'll do stand up in town, you know, but like, it's just getting depressing going out on these weekends. I don't know. So I do it. And I'm having a good time. I enjoyed, but I was, you know, I baked the quiche. I made the soup.
Yeah, the quiche guy.
I was the quiche man.
What was the name of it? Wasn't
Laura Lou's.
It was Laura Lou's.
Yeah. That's fucking.
I worked on that. You don't know how hard I worked on figuring out finding the name of that fucking bakery.
You got it. You got it. Laura Lewis.
Woo!
And so the only reason that the bakery even stopped existing was because I was living with this girl at the time who was just my friend. All right. She was my sister's best friend. So I've known her since I was in fifth grade and she was in third grade. She was just living with me. We were just friends. And one day, as it happens, it just clicked. And I was like, oh my God, I'm in love with her. You know, I'm in love with her. And we were just friends. And I tell her that. And she was like, I'm not saying that I don't kind of have feelings for you, but like, I just got out of college and I'm not ready for that right now. And I just know that with a guy like you, if I start dating you, this is it for me. Like, we're going to get married. And I'm just like, and I'm heartbroken. I'm so devastated. I don't know what to do. So not only could I not face anybody in my town, I had to leave the state and I moved to New York. And I told my mom, I was like, Mom, I'm moving to New York. I'm going to do comedy up there and see if that kind of sparks anything. And so, you know, obviously the girl moved out of my house. I moved to New York.
Now you weren't staying in the same room.
No, we weren't staying in the same room. But she, you know, so she breaks my heart. I moved to New York. A couple months later, she calls me and tells me, hey, you know, it's been a long time since I've seen you. Because we were like best friends, like legitimately friends. And she's like, it's been a long time since I've seen you. Like, what if I came up to New York and visited you? I want to see what your life's like now. And I was like, okay. She comes up to New York. And I remember telling all my buddies, I was like, I'm going to be, they're like, dude, you're going to relapse, man. You're going to want to go back. Yeah. You're going to want to try to, and I go, no, I'm over her, dude. I'm over her. Are you fucking kidding me? I'm married to the game, dude. I'm married to the game. So I was like, no. So she comes up, we hang out. I stay strong. I'm not showing any feelings, yada, yada. We had a fun week together. It was great. Then,
did you fuck?
No, we didn't. Wow. Not at all. And so she ends up going back. And a couple months later, I realized like my time in New York has come to an end. This isn't for me right now. I move home, start dating this other girl. And then that girl who was my roommate who came to see me in New York called me one night to come see her new house, her new place. And I get over there and she'd been drinking a little bit. And she goes, listen, I've been wanting to tell you something. I was like, what? She goes, when I came to see you in New York, I realized that I'd been in love with you this whole time and you need to break up with the girl you're with and get with me. And I said, okay. And that's my wife. So.
So much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with the one and only Corey Forrester, who is my soulmate I never knew I had. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel. It is edited by Colin Schmeling and would not be possible without the help, assistance, guidance, and love of Brittany Jo Sowards. If you like the podcast, and even if you don't like the podcast, and if you're listening now, you must like it. So please subscribe and leave a review, 5 stars, please. That way other people find it, and then I can keep the podcast going. You know what I'm saying, baby? As I mentioned before, I will be in Carmel, Indiana on January. I was going to say July, which I wish it was. January at Feinstein's at the Carmichael Hotel in Carmel, Indiana. So get your ass there. It's going to be a great show, and it's a small, wonderful room. So I'm telling you, it's going to be a lot of fun. Also, follow me on Twitter at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD. On Instagram at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD, because I'm a Jewish. TikTok at Judy Gold. Who cares? Just follow me. Just love me. I just need love. That's all I need. And I'm wishing you all, I know this COVID shit, I can't take anymore. I mean, I know you can't take anymore, but can we just talk about me now? Because I never talk about myself. Just be safe. Get boosted. Get reboosted. Get boosted again. Get a booster seat. Boost your ass up on a fucking booster thing that you use at, you know, sporting events. Just do a boost, okay? Wear a mask. Be safe. Oh, my God. When is this going to fucking be over? I love you all. Thank you so much for listening to Kill Me Now. And if you're still listening, you're my favorite person in the entire world, okay? Beyond.com. Tune in next week for part 2 of Corey Forrester, who I fucking love. Anyway, it's a new year. That's me being fake happy. It's got to get better, right? And as we always say, so long!